birth of a baby is a defining moment in a woman's life.
But what about the birth of a mother?
That's right, when a baby is born, so too is a mother.
This transition from woman to mother has a name. It's called matrescence.
This developmental stage is as powerful and irreversible as adolescence, and yet few women have ever heard of it.
So let's talk about it.
Let's talk about it. Each episode, we will bring you honest and thought-provoking conversations, evidence-based research and knowledgeable guests in order to help you emerge a more powerful and aligned version of yourself.
So join us, your hosts Kelly and Bree, as we attempt to make sense of our matrescence journey and to help you make sense of yours. In today's episode, we chat to Will. Will is a local Brisbane dad and one of the 2% of men who follow us on Instagram. As you will soon hear, Will has a little boy who is the same age as my daughter, Emmy. Recently, I was chatting to Will about the birth of his son and his transition to fatherhood. It was so refreshing to hear a dad speak candidly about this transition, the good, the bad, and the totally unexpected. I immediately knew that we had to have him as a guest on the podcast. As I'm sure you know by now, our podcast is dedicated to helping women make sense of their matrescence journey. But today we wanted to shift our focus a little bit to the dads and non-birthing partners. When we started the podcast and the Instagram page a year ago, the term matrescence is largely unheard of. While the term is yet to enter into everyday vernacular, we do wholeheartedly believe that there is a growing awareness of this powerful rite of passage. We now have a handful of experts, a handful of books, a handful of Instagram pages, and even some blog posts dedicated to educating and honouring women through their transition from maiden to mother. It's exciting and a privilege to be a part of. As the women in our community grow in their understanding of matrescence, we are sensing a growing capacity and desire to understand their partner's experience of parenthood. More than once, we have received questions along the lines of, if women's transition to motherhood is called matrescence, what is men's transition to fatherhood called? It's a good question, and the short answer is that we don't really know. While matrescence remains largely unheard of, under-researched and unacknowledged, men's and non-birthing partners' experiences are somehow even less explored. But here is what we know. Just as matrescence is a powerful and irreversible transition for women, the same is true for men and non-birthing partners. While they may not physically experience pregnancy, birth, and/or breastfeeding, the birth of a child disrupts their lives in many similar ways, including but not limited to changes in their hormones, increased stress, disrupted sleep, changes to their sex life, less downtime, changes to their social life, finances, and even the function and structure of their brains. Basically, it's big. While there is a huge lack of research into men's experiences of the transition to fatherhood, and even less on non-birthing partners' experiences, this rite of passage has been given a name, patrescence. Today, we get to explore patrescence through the eyes of a local Brisbane dad. Throughout this episode, we discuss his fears and apprehension about fatherhood, how he found the experience of trying to conceive, the moment he found out he was going to be a dad, his involvement in the pregnancy, watching his son crown, and so much more. The episode is rich and hilarious and is definitely one that you're going to want to listen to with your partner. Enjoy. All right. Hi, Will. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning.
Do you want to start by telling us a little bit about who you are, where you're from, and who's in your family?
33, 34 next month. Tegan is my wife. We have a little boy, 9.5 months old, named Luke. It's just the three of us for the moment.
Yeah, more on the cards.
For work. Oh,
we'll get to that.
Undecided.
Right?
For work, I'm a fitter and turner. So I'm basically a metal worker, and Tegan and I run our own business. Just your suburban dad, just a house, mow the lawn.
Love it. So we have typecasted you as our regular dad today.
You've pretty much nailed it.
So what we wanted to do was take a step away from experts and just like really have the opportunity to chat to a regular dad about what this transition is like, because more and more we're starting to hear from women about what this transition is like for them. But so often men are not part of these conversations, yeah, unless you're married to them, right? And this also applies to non-birthing partners. So if you're in a same-sex relationship, often the birthing person, the birthing mother, is going to maybe a mum's group, or they have women they're catching up with for playdates, and we just really feel that men don't get the same opportunity to share their experience. So
definitely
that's what
not.
We want to do today.
Well, you've come to the right place.
So where we're going to start is I want to know, did you always want to be a dad? Was it something that you had your heart set on, or how did you come to a place where you decided that, yes, I want to have kids?
Yes, but there's always a but. Very nervous, very inexperienced. We had a few friends with small children, but I don't sort of really flourish in a very, very young newborn environment. I guess I felt it easy to make a connection with, say, a child that was 2, mm-hmm, 3, 4, 5, you know, because there's the communication, there's the negotiation, there's, you know, just those facts where as a person, I was just so used to what would you like? And you can't just, you know, to your newborn, what would you like?
Yeah, I think a lot of dads relate to that experience.
So it was, I'm not going to say apprehensive. It was more just the fear of the unknown. Like, Tegan and I are fortunate enough to have private healthcare. We paid for that 3 years before he was born.
Okay.
So, you know, there was a lot of, not back and forth, there was a yes, but when. Yes, yep, but when. We're in the opposite sort of situation. Tegan was very keen very early. Not very early. We've been together for 16 years coming up this year. Married for 10.
Wow.
So
she'd waited her time.
Yeah. I was just going to say she's a very, very patient woman.
Yeah. Absolutely.
She definitely wanted kids before she was 30, but unfortunately that didn't happen. She was pregnant when she was 30. But, yeah, so I always did want to be a dad. It was just when.
Yeah. Well, 30 is still actually really quite young for today's standards, right?
Yes, yeah. It was actually one of the things which shocked me a lot was when we were sitting in their waiting room, the OBGYN office, and I sort of overheard, like, sort of the receptionist talking, and they referred to a mother of 35 as a geriatric pregnancy.
I know.
And Tegan and I just looked at each other like, That's not that far away.
I know. It's a pretty brutal label that we put on pregnant women. So how did you decide that the time was right?
I think it was more just not enjoying going out as much, enjoying spending more time at home, more quiet dinners, more friends over. It was definitely like a social shift. And I guess once I realized that, you know, I wouldn't have that sort of FOMO or, you know, things like that, it sounds horrible, but the idea became more appealing.
Absolutely.
I do have a goddaughter, and we do have a good connection and sort of, you know, obviously I was not, you know, known her from 1 week old.
You're right.
And I did have a good connection with her, and that helped a lot. But, yeah, so it was definitely a very, very long thought out decision. Many, many discussions over those 3 years with Tegan when, you know, when, like I said, when we'd decided to take the initial change of changing the healthcare over, and, you know, you have to have that 12 months before he was born. And,
yeah.
I'm going to be honest with you, I've lost track of the initial question.
No, you've answered it perfectly.
Perfect.
And I'm ready for my next question, which is, what was it like trying to conceive?
Great. It was like we were 18 and 20 again, you know. Sometimes I was like, the spirit is willing, but the flesh is worn down and weak. It was a time of just fun, enjoyment, disappointment, enjoyment, tracking, not tracking. I think, you know, the first month, so Tegan fell pregnant on the fourth month.
Okay.
The first month was sort of very, relaxed, very, you know, we were just...
Let's try, but
we were
not
just,
try.
Yeah, yeah, you know, we were just going through the motions. Obviously, that didn't work, and Tegan was, you know, apps and tracking this, and we have to have sex now, and, you know, like, this morning and this and then. I was just like, okay. And then, yeah, obviously, that first month, disappointment, you know, like, period came in, negative tests. Another month of that, you know, tracking, trying. Just all that, you know, Tegan's a very, very, very big researcher. She spends a lot of time researching anything and
a lady after
everything. My own heart. Yes. And then sort of after that second month of tracking and negative tests and disappointment, I don't know if we just sort of were like, oh, this is, you know, this is quite odd. Tegan had hormone imbalances basically through her entire life. She was taking progesterone to try and level things out, always had irregular periods, was off the pill from a very, very young age, and we just had to be very careful. It was funny because after those, like, you know, two solid months, we were like, all this wasted time.
I know.
All these wasted condoms.
You've spent so long trying not
exactly.
to get pregnant. And then you just assume, right,
that it'll just happen. Yeah, it'll just jump straight in. But, yeah, on that fourth month, after, you know, like a bit of, I guess, disappointment and I wouldn't say heartbreak. It was more just I could tell it was playing on Tegan's mind a lot.
Do you feel that really solidified that you wanted to have kids?
Definitely. Definitely, you know, because now it was a couple's project. And it was funny, on that fourth month, you know, we were feeling just a bit...
deflated.
But, yeah, just a bit beaten, I guess. And no tracking, just sex when we wanted to, you know, blah, 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 just all the normal stuff. And
legs
then
up the wall.
Yeah. And, you know, like... letting it marinate. And then, yeah, we just, the test came through. Tegan had tested very, very late at night for a reason I can't quite remember. But I get up very, very early for work and leave 99.99% of the time before she's awake. She left the positive test on the kitchen counter. So I've come downstairs to, you know, get ready for the day and get my lunch out of the fridge, blah, 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 and I just about fell over. But, yeah, and then it was, you know, just a quick run upstairs and a, really? Really? Yeah, you know, I want to test again tomorrow and, you know, double, triple, you know, like all the tests in the world. And then we were on and it was just, in true Tegan style, it was just very, very, very organized from the get-go, you know, like sort of, picking an OBGYN, picking sort of what style of birth she wanted, obviously not she wanted, we wanted, the discussions of her and I, maybe her mom. There was just a lot of, I guess, discussion, and I would get to the point where I was like, babe, you know, this is 9-10 months away. And I guess I'm not a super, super long-term planner. I'm like I guess it comes from my work style. Something will land in my lap and I'll have to address it almost instantaneously, make a decision and then move forward. And for that not to be the case was sort of very foreign. I could tell Tegan was picking up on me being like sort of slightly frustrated because I'm like, this isn't applicable now. You know, like it's not applicable now. Like, you know, like, you know, it's next year. You know, like Luke was born in April. I distinctly remember saying to her, I don't want to talk about this anymore until after Christmas because, you know, it's just that terribly stressful period, you know, with family commitments and things like that. And
yeah,
it just got to the point, like working through whilst we were pregnant. I guess I was more, I just wanted to deal with things as they came to me, which obviously I needed some adjustment because, you know, you can't just be like, oh, hi, yep, OBGYN, yeah, we're having the baby next week. That's cool. I'll see you then. Like,
we are fundamentally against winging it.
Yeah, so of course.
Might be a little bit of more course.
On Tegan's side. Oh, 100%. And, you know, like.
But do you think that for you that was apprehension or fear or
yes.
It's just inherent to who you are?
I think it was, it was probably 60% fear.
Yeah.
You know, coming to the terms with by Easter-ish next year, you're going to be a father. Your whole life is going to change. And it was one of those things where you were like, how is it going to change? You know, I was creating, I guess, hypothetical situations in my head, and then I'd catch myself worrying about, not necessarily worrying, but trying to deal with things before they had arisen. And, you know, like, I was sort of like, I'm like, is this my personality changing already? Like,
yeah.
But yeah, it was,
it's overwhelming to think about, right?
Yeah. And I think I definitely pushed, I'm not going to say pushed back, but was more of a, I was more cutthroat with, no, we don't need to deal with that. You know, obviously I was very on board with, finding like an OBGYN that we both build a good rapport with, that Tegan was comfortable with, you know, that it was more, I think that was one of the biggest things for us, sort of finding someone, to basically who had experience to, I guess, walk through the entire sort of journey with us. I guess it was very, very odd because, you know, as a man, we had a male OBGYN. You're letting another male into something that was always, it was only your area.
Like,
it was
so private, right?
Exactly. And I guess I just had to take, not necessarily take a back seat, but go, no. This Tegan has to be comfortable with this person more than I have to be comfortable with them. You know, like, it's important for me, but it's more important for her. It was a weird time, a very, very weird time leading up. Just a lot of mixed emotions from, just apprehensive, the fear of the unknown. Am I going to be a good dad? And that was actually one of the things where, you know, I didn't necessarily question my own abilities, but it was more, you know, I knew I was always going to have a red hot crack, but would it be successful? You know, like, and I guess success comes in many, many ways. You know, like, would I be happy? Would Luke be happy? Would Tegan be happy with how I was going? Would she think I was not necessarily applying myself enough, but would she think that I was a super involved present father? And, you know, like, I was hoping she would think that. And, you know, like, we've been together for such a long time. It was, I guess it built my confidence up a bit that, you know, we were together for so long, married for so long, and she hadn't left me yet, so.
Was that a concern of yours, how it would change your relationship?
Yes, definitely. More just because of the time. Like, you know, it had been her and I for 16 years, you know, no other responsibilities, fiscally free, time free, you know, just, and it even got to that point of, you know, we are both, well, Tegan is definitely more of an introvert than I am. I guess I'd class myself as an introverted extrovert. Like, you know, it's sort of one of those things where I do thrive in social situations, but there's definitely weekends where I'm just like, nope, phone off, staying at home. Like, this is even before Luke, and just enjoy my own company. And Tegan and I, even though we lived in the same house, we would have, you know, a full day where she would just read or, you know, whatever, and I would just mow the lawn and do boring shit that I enjoyed because of the lack of stimulation.
Yeah.
And, you know, and that would, you know, recharge the both of us. And Because we were both very social people, because I would often, I wouldn't say drag, but I would bring Tegan with me, and she would, you know, she'd get to the point like, oh no, I'm ready to go home. And she'd like, and I'd be like, okay. You know, and like, I guess that entire thing was going to be upended. And that was one of my large fears. It sounds incredibly selfish.
Not at all.
But I guess it was one of the things that played on my mind, was just like everything we've known together for the last 16 years, we're just hitting that reset button and away we go. You know,
and we're all, you hope it's going to change for the better, but you really don't know, right?
Yeah. Like, I guess sort of what I was saying about not having that FOMO anymore, you know, I was ready to take on something else. Not without second guessing and being apprehensive and just scared. Mm. Just scared.
And I think that is such an important point, because we are asking more of dads and non-birthing partners than ever before in history to be really physically and emotionally involved and invested and well-researched and present at the birth.
Mm.
And there's almost no blueprint for this, because it's a very, very different way to how most men saw their dad's parent.
Yeah.
And we're also not scaffolding it for men. We are not supporting men and non-birthing partners in
this
new responsibility.
True. Very, very true. I think, I guess, one of the biggest things that I sort of wanted was, my parents are sort of in their 70s, very early 70s, very regimented gender roles, you know, just that classic parents born in the 50s sort of thing. And from a very, very, not very, very early age, you know, like sort of mid-teens, I was like, no, that's, you know, that's not for me. Like, that situation worked for them, you know, dad, mum basically never went back to work after she had my sister and I, you know, maybe for about 1 or 2 years, so sporadically, but then it would just never. And it was one of those weird things where growing up with a lot of, you know, like going over to friends' places and things like that, I'd be like, they'd be like, oh, you can't come over to such and such because mum has to finish work and she'd pick me up and then she'll pick you up and bring you up to the house. Like, just as children. And I guess that was super foreign for me to have two working parents, or even just a female breadwinner household. And, you know, obviously now it's so common and I like it.
Yeah, we've made some great changes, but it is hard when you're, you know, staring down the barrel of being a dad yourself and you're trying to imagine what life will look like for you.
Yeah, it's a lot of worried what ifs.
So take us through pregnancy. How were you feeling during pregnancy? Did you feel like you were connected to the baby, or it was still like a, I'll love this person when they get here, but now it's, at the moment, it's a bit like, ugh.
For the first couple of months, not at all. Definitely not at all. Once, you know, like, I guess most nights in bed, you know, you'd be laying there and, you know, try and speak to the belly and, you know, little rub and things like that. And then, you know, like a couple of nights, like, you know, be speaking or doing something, you know, you'd feel kicks back and be like, okay. You know, like once you get that little, once you get your foot in the door, it's a very lovely slippery slope, where, you know, I don't know if it was more, I guess, Tegan not pandering to my insecurity or like worries, but, you know, be like, oh, when you're speaking to me, he's moving more than he normally does, or things like that. And, you know, like that really, really helped. I think, as terrible as it sounds, as much as you guys already have going on, it's like one of those things where you have to, well, not have to, but it's really helpful if you draw your partner in.
Yeah, and we want to, right?
Yeah,
because they're having this magical experience and starting to hopefully feel connected to this baby.
Mm.
And we want to be able to share that with you, because it's tricky, right, to get invested in a person where you're not connected in that way yet.
Mm. And I think it's another thing where, I guess, you know, like I would definitely have to pick my battles. Like, Tegan didn't have a lot of morning sickness, but, you know, like when she did, they would be like, oh, you know, I couldn't just necessarily be like, oh, babe, you know, like, I'm feeling a bit worried about this, and, you know, and she's just leaning over the toilet. I'm like, okay, no. Like, I guess it was more just, we did have a lot of just pillow talk, I guess. And I think she was, I'm not going to say surprised, but happy that I was right in there, you know, like, throughout the pregnancy, I never missed an appointment. I went to every single one, even though the ones that, you know, they were just the super planned, come in, how are you going? Yeah, great. Any concerns? No. Can we do a scan, do some measurements, blah, 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 blah. Yes. There was two that I didn't go to, but
it's
we thought.
It's a pretty good.
No, but.
Pretty good track record, though.
But.
Okay. You can justify it.
Yes. Tegan took my mum and her mum to one of the appointments.
Oh,
just as, you know, just a little, I guess like a little token of, to make them feel included. Even though I could go, but I was like, no. You know, when we knew there was going to be a scan for measurements and let them see everything up on the screen. And, you know, like, cause that my mum's obviously in her 70s, Tegan's mum's early 60s. A lot has changed since they've had children when it comes to tech and just, you know, seeing the baby before it was there and so clear.
Yeah.
And I think, yeah. So I guess to get back to my original point, it was important to me that she, like, not dragged me in, but coerced me into being involved,
even though
baited. Because I did, it was just.
You just needed the nudge, right?
Yeah. I always wanted to, but, like, it was just, like, one of those times where you just don't feel, in the very, very early days, you don't feel a lot of connection. And even though Tegan was going through physical changes that she would notice, they wouldn't be so in my face, you know, especially the first, you know, 2.5 sort of months. And then, you know, you start showing and it, you know, like sort of she started having the symptoms of sort of like nausea in the morning. And you're like, before she got out of bed, I'd have to leave like 2 jats on the bedstand, you know, otherwise it was chaotic if I didn't.
All right. Now I'm going to go here and answer if you want to.
Yeah.
Or if you're not. Sex during pregnancy.
Yeah, giddy
What's
up.
What's it like?
Oh, sorry.
Tell us what it's like from your perspective as a man. And obviously we're generalizing. Not all men are going to feel the same.
Yeah.
But I'm selfishly very curious to know.
Great. Absolutely great. Yeah. There would obviously be times where just leave me alone. And then there would be other times where we're doing it, whether you like it or not.
And you didn't feel awkward or apprehensive? I know some men are a bit nervous about
it. I did Google that. Without a 12-inch penis, I don't think I could do any damage. No, I definitely did Google it, you know, because you're always like, but no. It's medically impossible.
Yeah, totally. And I think that sometimes as women we get so in our head about our changing bodies and all of that, so it's reassuring to hear that.
Well, it was definitely like I could definitely tell Tegan was feeling – it was just a mixture of rundown and I guess insecure it's not the right word because it didn't describe like the entire emotion. It was just – it was probably like 10% – insecurity mixed with like some worries of the what if and just the changes and just feeling off. And she was currently still working as a hairdresser, so on her feet a lot of the day, so when she came home, you know, she was just bugging, and you know, like, she would say to me, oh, I feel guilty about not washing up or this or that, or, you know, blah blah blah, and I'd be like, I can see how you feel. Just sit down.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it was funny because that, I think, impacted a lot on our sex life. When it came to feeling appreciated and not just feeling tired, and her knowing that I still wanted to do things for her, regardless of how she was changing or how she felt or if she was snappy or moody or hungry at ridiculous times.
Yeah. No, it just reminded me, we went through sex was not huge for us during either pregnancies, and we kind of got to the end of it, and I was like, you know, to my husband, Matt, like, you know, it's a shame that you haven't really wanted to have sex through pregnancy. Mm. He's like, what do you mean? Of course I have. I thought you didn't want to have sex. And I was like, no, I did. I just was worried that you didn't want to. And I'm like, have we just gone 9 months? Whoa. Like, not that we went a whole 9 months, yeah. But like 9 months where it could have been so
very
much better
sporadic.
When we could have cleared it up with one conversation.
Yeah. And it was, I think it was very reassuring and liberating.
Yeah.
For Tegan, 100%. To like said for me, you know, to still be nudging her on the shoulder in the morning, or you know, like sort of things like that, or just yeah, it was nice. I think where even to have something still stable,
yeah.
You know, where everything was changing around us. You know, I guess whilst she was pregnant, there wasn't a huge amount of change in our social lives because. Like I said, because Tegan's quite introverted, not a large drinker either. So, you know, she didn't really, you know, that didn't change, things like that. So I think it was a very, very slow onset, even though we were like progressing, you know, not quickly because it's just time.
Yeah.
But we were progressing through the early stages of pregnancy without a huge amount of changes.
So take us into the birth. How were you feeling leading up to birth? Did you feel prepared, well supported, educated? What was that like for you?
It was different because there was subjects that I was prepared for. There was things I was like, well, it's just going to go how it's going to go. So you're just going to have to, you know, be sort of semi-prepared for everything. I think the thing that helped a lot was that we built a really, really good relationship with our OBGYN. We started seeing him very, very early. He delivered 4 or 5 of our friends' children really late in the pregnancy. I actually found out that he delivered our neighbor's 2 kids and our neighbor's neighbor's 2 children.
Busy guy.
Yeah. it was definitely, well, it's a bit crass, but it wasn't uncomfortable sitting in a room with another man with his hands inside your wife. and I guess that was like reassuring, I guess, you know, like, I'm like, if I'm comfortable now, we're probably pretty all right.
Yeah.
And, sort of 7.5 to 8 months through, he was on our OBGYN was on holidays. And we met and had an appointment with our backup because Luke was due probably about 4 weeks after our OBGYN was due to get back on holidays. And so we saw this new guy. Both Tegan and I walked out of the, we didn't even get to the lift in the hospital, and we were like, I really, really hope we don't get him. And not that he wasn't a nice guy. He just...
You've got to connect
with
them.
Yeah, but he just wasn't our type of person. Like, we felt comfortable with Brad after the first appointment. And I guess that helped a lot. And I guess what I want to say is don't take your first option. Walk in.
Totally.
Just jump in, you know. And if none of that feels right, do something else.
Yeah. And not only is it a huge emotional investment and everything else, it's a huge financial investment. So you have the right to shop around, right?
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Make sure it's well placed.
And like, you know, it was, you know, like money isn't like at the top, you know, it shouldn't be the top tip top worry when you're trying to, you know, like have that type of experience. But like I said, we'd already paid for private healthcare for 3 years. For 3 years before we were even pregnant. So, you know, like there was another 10-ish months of, you know, of that sort of thing. And it was funny because it's probably about a month after he was born, cut it off like straight away. We were like, oof.
Yeah.
Time to get that, you know, like time to get that sort of back in order.
Absolutely. So from memory, Tegan was induced. Is
yeah,
right?
she was. So it was sort of the last appointment we had before his due date. And
how many weeks pregnant?
It's probably about 38 and a half, 30, mm-hmm. between 38 and 39. But we turned up to that appointment and we sat down and he just sort of said to us, so when do you want to have the baby? And I was like, I know this is your job, buddy, but I don't think it works like that. You know?
Yeah.
But, and then sort of, you know, he sort of said, you know, we can induce on like bang on the 40th week and this and that. And sort of, we were sort of very, very taken back. Like it was about a 30 to 40 minute appointment. And you know, like that was sort of the first question he asked and we didn't really give him an answer. So we just sort of, you know, worked through the motions of the appointment and blah, 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 blah. And, you know, like, I guess the entire appointment, I was just like, you know, like milling that over in my head. And we sort of, we had a discussion about induction, because I said, Tegan's very, 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 you know, organized and likes to have a schedule and things have a place. And to her, it was a great option. Because we run our own business as well, like, you know, like obviously things like this shouldn't take top priority, but like, I think the priority was more us having a plan, not being overly worried, having something to work towards, being prepared.
And it is a tempting option when, you know, so much feels out of control and unpredictable.
Yeah,
yeah, so
definitely.
When someone's like, you can know the exact time yeah, and date. Yeah,
just
it's
book
like,
in a time. Rock on.
Yes.
So we, I think the appointment was on like a Wednesday. I only work half days Fridays. So we just picked the Friday, to, I guess, get the process going. I finished work on the Friday, got home. Of course, there
bye
was
guys,
like,
going to have a baby.
Yeah. Like, there was, got home, there were suitcases at the door. There was, you know, just, never seen the house so clean in my life, you yeah. know, like there was, I felt bad even standing inside. Yeah. And so the time sort of came and we were, with our sort of, I guess, package isn't the right word, but, like our, what we sort of lined up for having the baby, you know, we were checking into the hospital about 6:30 PM on a Friday. Tegan would have been, I'm trying to think of the, it's not Syntocin, but it's basically, you know, they put a tablet up there to slowly induce overnight. So we were staying in the hospital the Friday night and basically getting the show on the road at 6:30 Saturday morning. We checked into the hospital. They did a vaginal exam on Tegan. She was already 3.5 centimeters dilated. So we were like, oh, okay. They didn't end up, whatever that tablet is called, they didn't end up putting that up. We stayed in, because we were there and Tegan was already 3.5 centimeters dilated, they were like, you can go home. And we were like, standing. We're standing in the room for this. So many things. It's like, you know, like we worked ourselves like this is it. It's go time. And then for someone just to go, oh, don't worry about it. Just come back in the morning. We were like, oh. And so we did end up staying overnight. God, I wish we went home. Mm. We had a room that had a single bed and a very uncomfortable vinyl sort of reclining layback chair that I obviously spent the night in.
You didn't make Tegan sleep in the recliner.
I was going to put her on the floor and I was going to get in the bed.
It's my big day today.
Yeah, babe, I've got to have my shit together. Like, But in the hospital, they had this horrible system where if one person pushed the bell on, like, to call the midwives, the entire hallway just boom, boom, and it was just all night, obviously, you know, people with 1, 2, 3 day old children trying to breastfeed, things like that. But I think it was just very frustrating because I'm a very, very light sleeper, and every time someone would hit that button, it would just tear me out of the, you know, 30 to 40 minute sleep.
Yeah.
Okay. And meanwhile, Tegan's just beside me. I'm like looking over at her like, but I'm like, okay, fair.
Yeah. Big day tomorrow. So you started the process on the Saturday.
Yeah, yeah. So we were just up, showered. We were expecting breakfast, but that didn't happen because we got breakfast in the birthing suite. But we went down at 6:30. They did an exam. She'd progressed quite well overnight. She was starting to get sort of mild discomfort, and I think they put on a very, very, very low dose of, maybe Syntocin is the thing I'm thinking of that they put her on during that process. But she wasn't in active labor up till probably about midday, a little after midday, and Luke was born at 4. But jumping back, when she started to, you know, have those heavier contractions, you know, she was up, out of bed, leaning over the bed, just heaving in pain, and back on the bed, then on the chair, then on the ball, and the bed. Then, you know, it was just sort of like musical chairs for a moment.
And how are you feeling?
I was getting slightly more a mix of worried and frustrated because I couldn't do anything. That was probably the biggest, you know, like one of my biggest downfalls was letting that get to me too much, going like, you know, you should be helping her, you know, and I'm just like, oh, I can't, I can't do anything. And our OBGYN was in and out. Now, obviously he still had appointments, which is sort of directly above the birthing suite in Greenslopes in Brisbane. And sort of we had met our midwife early in the morning, and she was fantastic. She was our age. She was happy-go-lucky. She was very, very positive, very open, very easy to talk to. Not yet a parent herself, so it was, I'm not going to say kind of weird because neither will we, but
yeah.
And you were just like, ooh, like, you know, I'm sure you've done this hundreds of times, of course, you know, like, you know, she was our age, so I'm assuming she'd been in the job for a while. But, yeah, just very reassuring, very comforting, very, very kind and soft. And
they're in more of a continuous presence?
She was there the entire time, which was really lucky because, you know, like I said, we sort of kicked the show off at about 6:30, which was when her shift started. And she basically finished her shift right as the show was over, which was really, really nice. Cause I just couldn't imagine what it would be like to do a handover, not necessarily from their point of view, but from ours.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh God,
so disruptive.
there's a new player in the game.
Like, don't leave us.
Yeah.
So I remember Tegan got an epidural.
Yes.
How did that feel for you? Because I know that a lot of men feel, including my husband, feel a lot of relief once
things so
calm down a bit with
before that, I was very, very, very worried because it got to the point where Tegan was basically on the bed, rolling around in pain, becoming quite distressed. She has quite bad asthma. And I could, you know, that was sort of starting to flare up and things like that. And, you know, we had that conversation, you know, like, what are we going to do if it's too much? And basically we just, like, we were leaving it open slather, and Tegan was getting basically just really, really distressed. I was, you know, standing over on the edge of the bed, and I was actually starting to get a bit woozy. And which sounds terrible. I'm just standing there, like hands on the bed, holding her hand, and I'm starting to get really, really lightheaded. And I just let go of her hand and sort of walked across the room, and like the midwife and Tegan were looking at me like, where are you going? And I grabbed a chair from the other side of the room and approached the bed and like put it behind my calves. So if I went down, I'd go down into the chair and like not cause any more trouble.
Yeah.
I'd just be passed out there by myself. But so sort of that happened. You know, then I was sort of fine once I was sitting out, obviously more about me. Tegan was not fine. We got to the point where we were like, there's no awards for being uncomfortable. Giddy up. Unfortunately, the
anaesthetist.
I was focusing on like, don't say that word wrong, don't say that word wrong. She was on call. So it was about a 20 to 30 minute wait.
Which feels so long.
Which feels like forever. But as soon as she came in, she was very just, yeah, really, really friendly. Obviously was there, job to do, just straight, like we were straight into it. Tegan was sat up, hunched over the bed. I was sitting on a chair in front of her, holding her up, holding her still. She obviously was covered in monitors because they have to, when they put the epidural in, you know, you have to do it between contractions because it's very, very hard to hold still, I have learned. Whilst. and, you know, we were just sort of sitting, waiting, watching the monitor, and it was, yeah, just bouncing up and down. Then we're like, okay, we're on. We've got a good couple of minutes. Like I said, Tegan was bracing against me. Starker's little blue paper gown. and basically, yeah, she put it in. Tegan sort of, it was painful, but I could tell she was like, this is nothing.
Compared to contractions.
And then, well, I can't tell you from experience, but from what I saw, yes. And then it was just almost like someone pulled back the curtains, the sun came in, and we were sitting there talking about something silly like this new chocolate Cadbury had released.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, I was up. I was out of the chair. Do you want a sandwich? You know, this, that. You know, are you right to do this? Blah, blah, blah. Just, I was back at 100%. So I was just trying to be useful, which was so hard. Not only because, you know, you had the OBGYN, but also the midwife, you know, like, this is their job. You know, I just can't imagine, say, someone coming in to my workplace, which, you know, every single day and being like, oh, no, don't worry, mate, I'll take care of this. You just sit back and I'll ask you for help if you need it. Like,
yeah.
Like it was very, I guess I had to take the back seat, but, you know, I could understand that within reason. Some of these just like, oh, I'm not going to do the vaginal exam.
Not today.
but, yeah, it was very, 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 very calm. Basically, we sort of, it was like about maybe another 2 hours, just literally just general chit-chat, just chat, you know, every couple of hours or hour, Brad would come down, I'm guessing, assuming between his appointments, do a check, how are you feeling, blah, 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 blah. Got to the point where Tegan was 10 centimetres and it was probably a little before 3 p.m. in the RV. And she got to the point where basically they were bumping up. We could see them on the monitor, but she could only feel them in the peak,
mm-hmm.
Which was nice because, you know, like for her, I think it was the small amount of pain, then it ramping up, then her getting flustered, then it you know, it was just like a snowball effect. But yeah, so came in, saw us on the road, time to have the baby. I was like, okay. Tegan started pushing.
So where are you in this? She's on her back in bed.
I have recovered from my almost fainting into a chair experience, and I'm down there on...
Down the business end?
Down the business end. I'm on the right-hand leg. The midwife is on the left-hand leg. We're holding it up, and Tegan's going for it.
So you're watching the whole thing.
I'm there. I love that. I'm in.
A bit apprehensive.
If I was still anywhere near what I was when I had the chair behind my legs, I would have just gone to the bathroom and sat on the floor in the shower.
Yeah.
But no, I think... once I could see that she was not heaving in pain, I was like, we're on. You know, this is my time to get in, get it done. She, like, it was one of those things where she could always see me.
Mm-hmm.
And although I could see, you know, what was going down downtown, I could, I guess I not forced myself, but was very conscious of my reactions, body language, expressions, you know, there was no, like, you know, there was no sudden gasping. It was a really, really surreal feeling where I guess you were just at the most vulnerable you've ever been, because there's nothing you can do. You're just, you're under direction, you know, and I guess I did feel, useful because, you know, I could see the contractions coming, even though everyone else in the room could, you know, you could see the contractions coming, you could see in the peak, and you're like, I'd be like, oh, you know, babe, like about 20, 30 seconds, probably gonna have to lift those legs up again and, you know, and have another go. And yep. So that, you know, probably sort of went down for about 40, 50 minutes. And then his head, came out, I guess. The midwife encouraged Tegan to put a hand down there and have a little feel around. She did, loved it. I was like, eh, do the same, you know. You know, obviously she can't see, but I'd watch the whole thing. And then from then on in, it was very quick. It was very, very quick. Like, his head was sort of a third of the way out, then it was all the way out. And then all of a sudden, his shoulders were out, and then just slipped out, like, just slipped out.
Yeah.
It was a, like, I could see he was okay, but he wasn't making any noise, which was, I was like, oh, no.
Which is completely normal, but it can be scary, right?
Yeah, yeah, but, like, I could see, you know, I could see his eyes open. Obviously, he was covered in bits and pieces. But he was cleaner than I expected, but very, very, very quiet. And, you know, I guess the midwife just sort of assured, no, she was like, no, it's fine. You know, like, and obviously he was being monitored through the whole birthing process as well. And it was just a really, really weird feeling. Then obviously straight from Tegan up to Tegan. Time for chest. First latch was good, not great. Then once that was sort of all over and done with, Brad was, do you want to cut the cord? Giddy up. Yeah. Yeah. It's a bit weird, bit juicy and gummy, but, but yeah, so cut the cord. And it was just sitting, waiting. It was like, because he wasn't distressed and it was just calm chaos. It was calm chaos. Like, you know, like, obviously one of the weirdest things that happened after Luke was when Tegan birthed the placenta, like after the cord was cut, Brad literally just wrapped the umbilical cord around his hand, put his hand on Tegan's stomach and was like, all right, let's go. We got one more thing. And, you know, just she was pushing and he was just,
yeah.
Sorry for the sound effect, but.
It's strange.
And
it?
Yeah, kinda, you
like
know,
a jellyfish.
Yeah, and sort of, you know, even though Tegan was feeding, you know, it was in like a, I don't know, like a large surgical bowl or whatever, and, you know, we both sort of looked at it. Oh, yeah, okay. Like, just had a little, now, like, what do we do with it?
Yeah.
But yeah, obviously, we didn't do anything like take it home and dry it out and eat it or whatever. And then sort of we got up to, it was probably about 40 minutes or an hour after he was born. The epidural had worn off. and Luke was content. So Tegan was up out of the bed, showering unaided. And I'm sitting there, and obviously she's handed Luke to myself, and I'm just the most tense, tense holding, and he's just sort of, like, resting on top of me. There was no cuddling or supporting it. You know, he was just there, and I was trying not to move. You know, don't ruin this. He's quiet, content. Tegan's having a moment to herself in the shower. Been a big day, you know, like, and I just felt really uptight. Just really tense.
Do you feel like that connection, that love, was instant for you, or it kind of was a slow burn?
It was strong instantaneously, but then it tapered off and then it came back at within probably about the first 3 months. It was a very sort of weird, because he'd sort of was drowsy and sleepy, so his eyes weren't open when I was holding him, and I don't know if something disturbed him or something like that, but he opened his eyes and he looked up and obviously realized that, I don't know how true it is, but you know, it wasn't Tegan. and he sort of like looked up and I looked down and I was like, okay, hello. And I guess just because he didn't instantaneously lose it, I was like, oh no, we got, like, you know, it was just that very, very, very small win very early that sort of, I was definitely not confident at all, no way, but it was just that small win which sort of carried me through the first couple of chaotic hours where, you know, like the first time when he cried, we were just like, what? But we handled it. It was... At the end of the day, we were both obviously shattered, but just running on nervous energy. But we had a really good experience. I'm going to say we were just happy with it overall, because I guess everything went, it's not like we expected it so far in advance, but we're like, okay, if we do this, that's going to be the result. And when we did that, that was the result. Like, you know, just to have that happen like 3 or 4 times in a row where you think, you know, you're going to have no control whatsoever was kind of reassuring and sort of lifted us out of that like period of unknown where we're like, okay, we've done this step. Now comes the hard part.
Beautiful. So I'm going to skip over a few of the details because I'm conscious of time, but I want to know, in those early days, what did you see your role as being?
Oh.
And what helped you?
Chef, cleaner, bringer of things.
Nappy changer.
Yeah. Nappy changer. Babysitter for as long as he would tolerate me. It was definitely more geared that way, you know, like, even though, like I said, that's sort of when it sort of tapered off, and that sort of first 3 to 3.5 months where I just couldn't cut it. There was, you know, no matter what I did, he wanted mum, like, and that was it. And, you know, it was one of those things where I felt a bit shit.
A lot of people describe feeling like rejected.
Yeah,
like
exactly. You know, and I would just, those first, so I took off, 2 weeks, with the option of more, you know, we work for ourselves. So it was always, 2 weeks were planned and then, you know, Tegan could just ring me up anytime, jump in the car, 15 minutes from home.
Yeah.
So go. It got to that sort of like 1.5 week mark and, you know, sort of sat down and said, you know, I was like, are you ready to, you know, to not have my assistance for at least 10 hours during the day? And she said, yeah, but I'll probably call you. and then I guess when it like sort of rounding back, I did feel like a live-in maid. there was just, you know, even after when I went back to work, it was, you know, I'd come home at 4 p.m. and between sort of 4:30 and 9:30, I'd just be dinners, lunches, washing up, cleaning, clothes washing, helping where I could, feeding. Luke and I, we always did bath time together, always. So I was always, that was just our thing. I used to give him one bottle before bath time, but unfortunately that only lasted for 6 weeks and then just flat out refused it and has basically never gone back since.
Super common.
So we're 9.5 weeks in. Sorry, 9.5 weeks. 9.5 months in, and he did, the bottle for that first 6-ish weeks. And then he had two bottles back-to-back at, 7 months on the same day. Then never again since. It was just the most, just really foreign.
But did you feel that the intensity waned? So there's this initial period where almost mum is caring for the baby and you're caring for mum and the home.
Definitely.
And then as they kind of come out of that fourth trimester, it opens up a little bit. You have more ability to settle them, more confidence.
Definitely. I think it was falling into that routine where bath time was ours. That was it. And it was sort of really handy for Tegan as well because, she would go and have a shower to herself, be clean, not covered in
the best.
Just sort of, even if she just wanted to stand there in the shower with the water running over her. There was definitely a better connection, from sort of 4 months onwards, where when I would enter the room, he would smile and light up and laugh and giggle and I could make him laugh. And I think it was, he was tolerating me and I was learning to, I guess, be with him, I guess. Be with him without being nervous. Just, I think it was 100% a confidence thing, because 99% of the time, no matter what happened, Tegan could just put him on the boob.
Yeah.
Fine. And I'm just staring down no, I don't think so, buddy.
I know. For all the challenges of breastfeeding, it is a huge privilege to be able to meet their needs so easily.
It's the key. It's the key to the lock that we do not have.
Yes. All right. So we're getting towards the end of our time, and I'm going to fire some questions. I know.
Sorry. I'm happy to stay.
I'm going to fire some questions at you, and I think we're both going to be tempted to take a deep dive, but let's keep them fairly short because I want to get through a few of them.
Mm-hmm.
So my first one is, what was it like going back to work, and what was the biggest challenge of being both a dad and an employee and a business owner?
I guess it was great for routine. We had a discussion where basically we want to get this into a routine as quickly as we can. And that was basically part of me going back to work so early because this is the way it's going to be, most of the time. So I did end up going back in those 2 weeks. Tegan never called me. The biggest thing was FOMO. The biggest thing was FOMO again. Like I said, even though that I didn't build that connection to in the later months, it was still just watching. Just watching. And, Tegan would constantly send me photos throughout the day, but it would get to the point where I'd be like, babe, you're going to have to tone it down or cut it. Because I just sit there all day, just looking and looking and looking and looking. It was good going back to work because it was the first step of our lives. It was basically the next transition, transitioning into a functioning family rather than just
being in your
bubble. Just being in your bubble, never leaving home, sort of things like that. But no, it helped a lot with structure.
Perfect. So my next question is, how do you feel that fatherhood changed you as a person? Big one.
Yeah. A lot more patient. I'm not an overly patient person. And I get that just stems from work. But I'm definitely more patient with people now because you have to be, and more open to just listening and observing, I I guess that was the biggest thing, just being more open and not taking things for face value. Because, like I said, one of the things that I really struggled with was there was no communication, there was no negotiation, there was no with Luke. It was just, I'm unhappy. Give it your best guess.
Totally.
But yeah, so
great.
That was it, really.
Next one is, what has been the biggest challenge for you as a dad?
Building that confidence to be left alone. Building that confidence to be left alone. It has taken quite a long time. I definitely struggled with that. Luke is inherently quite a happy, calm baby, which is good, but still just that confidence to be left alone, like I said, without that key to that lock, without those booze. And because he stopped taking formula so early, I literally couldn't do anything. Like, you know.
Yeah. It's tough. And I think that's a huge testament to Tegan because she's such a calm.
Oh, yes.
She parents like she's had 7 children. It is amazing to see in action.
It was helpful but not helpful in sort of that thing where, you know, like everyone's like, you're going to be such a good mother. You're going to be such a good mother. You're going to be such a good mother. Tegan would hear that day in, day in. And you'll be suddenly, she's like, what if I'm not?
Yeah.
Like, what if I'm not? Like, and, you know, that actually played on her mind. That was a large thing that played on her mind. You know, I guess people setting expectations for her, you know, like entering a journey where she'd never been into. But not part of the question. But
no, it's a little segue to the next question, which is, how has it changed either your relationship or how you view Tegan?
Not rough. Very, very, very different at the start. It was like meeting again, but knowing that you had built the base to get through this together already. So, you know, that there was definitely new challenges that we'd never, you know, come to, which was very, very foreign, like I said, because we've been together for 16 years, married for 10. So, you know, that there basically really wasn't anything we hadn't faced as a couple before. So there was definitely points of just impatience with each other just because of sleep and when things weren't going our way or Luke was just being a rat. we just had to learn to be kind to each other again in a different way, even when we didn't feel like it.
Absolutely. I think even after you've been together for so many years, there are new challenges.
Yeah.
Like, I don't remember ever feeling resentment towards Matt until I became...
Yeah. It was definitely the thing, because I could tell, obviously, she was very agitated because she had that key that I did not possess. And, you know, I guess I got to go to work. I got time away. You know, it's sort of one of those double-edged sword. Like I said, there was a lot of amount of FOMO, but I also got to disconnect, focused on something else for sort of like 10-ish hours a day.
Which is a huge test. No, it's
privilege.
I'm trying to find the words to say, essentially, to be able to empathize with the other person is fantastic.
Yeah.
Because for you, it could feel like, oh, it's so hard for me missing out. And I, you know, you're lucky that you get to be the stay-at-home parent, and both things are true.
Yeah.
Being able to put yourself in the other person's shoes and see how hard it is for them in their respective choice is awesome.
There was constant reminders, not verbally or anything, but, you know, I'd get home and Tegan would be like, here. And I'd be like, okay, one of those days, just hand him to me and be like, I'm out for like 20, 30, yeah, 40 an hour.
We all know those days. All right, so the next question is, we've got 3 more. What do you wish you knew before becoming a dad? Because there's going to be people listening who aren't there yet.
You will never be good first try. Massive learning curve. Be kind to yourself. Sometimes even turning back to when we're in the hospital for the first 3 or 4 days, sometimes you have to be selfish with your sleep, because basically if you're not at 100%, you can't help your partner. I think whilst they are the main focus, sometimes you just have to jump in and get a couple of hours when you can, because, you know, there's no point in both of you being absolutely wrecked. You know, you need one reasonable person. Not saying Tegan wasn't reasonable, but driven by, you know, lack of sleep, frustration. Totally. But yeah, it's more that be kind to yourself so you can be better for your partner.
Got it. So how can we better support men in their transition to fatherhood? Because we've got a long way to go.
Encourage them to find a village. Find a group of, I guess that's one of the massive changes as well. When you become a father, you tend to weed out your shit friends. And you grow closer to those people that you can emotionally connect with. And, you know, like that's not a thing in mainstream male, you know, life. It's all, hey, you know, it's going to be fine. Rah, 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 rah. But finding, even if it's only just one mate, that you can go, hey, I'm feeling a bit shit about this. But I think it's more being assertive, being active, like I said, being, like I said, with the sleep thing, taking charge, you have to make men realize that it's going to be shit. It's going to be shit at the start. It's going to be shit. There's no other way. The first 3 months are going to be
rough.
I was going to say terrible, but that's not right because, you know, there's wins with the child that you have Absolutely. Along the way, the first smile, the, you know, like the things like that. But no, be prepared to feel used and abused. And with that, I guess it's just be an active researcher. Be an active researcher and, like I said, surround yourself with men, or not necessarily even men, but it's just you've got to encourage your partner to reach out to his friends, preferably people that already have kids, but if you're not in that situation, just someone you can trust.
Such a good point. And the last one, what is the best thing about being a dad?
For me, having someone that I can see is already a small version of myself. The personality, the looks, the cheek, just the fulfillment. Coming, I think it's coming home where, you know, I'm definitely not the main caregiver, and him still being pleased to see me when I come through the door. Just doesn't matter how crap a day, how little sleep I'd had the night before, coming through after a day of work and him just lighting up, crawling over, it's the best feeling in the world.
The best. Well, thank you so much, Will. It has been so awesome to have the chance
You're most welcome.
Chat to you.
Maybe see you again.
Thanks, Will. All right. Beautiful.
Thanks for joining us for today's conversation. If you want to hear more like this, don't forget to hit subscribe so you don't miss an episode. If you'd like to know more about anything we talked about or you heard on the podcast today, check out our website, www.birthofamother.com.au. You can find us on Instagram at matrescence.podcast or send us an email to info@birthofamother.com.au.
If you think others could benefit from this podcast, take a screenshot of you listening to this episode to post on your social media and tag us. Alternatively, consider leaving a review with your favourite things about the Matrescence podcast. This really helps us to increase our visibility and ensure we are reaching as many women as possible. As always, thank you for spending your time with us. We hope you will tune in next time.